Usually when you flip a light switch, your biggest worry is really just whether you'll trip a circuit breaker.
Right, yeah.
But like step into an oil refinery or a chemical plant, and that same switch is literally a potential detonator. You're operating in an environment where the very air around you can just be explosive.
It is incredibly dangerous, yeah. The margin for error in these facilities is, well, it's literally zero.
Which is exactly why today we're doing a deep dive into the dense compliance frameworks of ATEX and ISEXX, basically the exact rule books that keep these hazardous environments from going up in flames.
Yeah, and to navigate it, you really have to untangle a fundamental split in the regulatory world. I mean, first you have ATEX, which is a strict, mandatory legal framework.
Mandatory meaning you have to have it.
Exactly. If you are placing equipment on the market anywhere in the European Economic Area, you have absolutely no choice. It is required by law.
Okay, and then there's IESEX.
Right. IESEX is different. It's built on the IEC 6079 series of standards, making it a voluntary international certification. And that one is recognized in over 50 countries worldwide.
Okay, so let's unpack this. So is ATEX basically like a mandatory state driver's license that you absolutely must have to operate locally, while IESEX is more like an international driving permit that just makes global trade easier?
That analogy actually works really well. But, you know, keep in mind, a lot of companies actually end up holding both.
Oh, really? Both of them?
Yeah, because ATEX gets them into the EU legally, and then the ID6 certification opens up the rest of the global market without having to, you know, retest everything from scratch.
Right, right. Which actually begs the question, if a company gets that international IESEX permit and uses the European zone system to categorize their hazard levels, can they just, like, slap those European zone labels on equipment heading for a facility in the U.S.?
Traditionally, no, not at all.
Why not?
Well, the U.S. relies heavily on the National Electrical Code, specifically NEC 500, which uses a completely different architecture of classes and divisions.
Right, so completely different terminology.
Exactly. A facility manager in Texas is looking for Class I, Division 1 gear, not a European Zone 0 or Zone 1 label.
But wait, doesn't the newer NEC 505 standard actually allow for the zone system in the States now? I mean, why wouldn't a manufacturer just print one universal zone label and ship it everywhere to save on overhead?
It sounds great in theory, but a label isn't just a suggestion, right? It's tied directly to local enforcement.
Ah, the local inspectors.
Precisely. Even if you use NEC 505 to adopt zones in the U.S., your local authority, having jurisdiction, the AHJ, they have the final say.
So you still have to play by their rule.
Always. If you're bringing over ATEX or IESEX equipment, you still have to verify it meets specific U.S. installation practices. You must add mandatory NEC-required elements to the tagging. You can't just, you know, cross out division, write zone, and bypass the local inspectors.
Got it. Okay, well, let's actually look at the hardware that survives these environments. When you read an equipment label, say, a string like 2G, XD, IIC, T4, GigE, I mean, it looks like absolute alphabet soup.
It really does. But let's break that exact string down, because every single character is a literal layer of survival.
Okay, hit me.
So starting off, 2D means it's surface industry equipment, not mining.
Makes sense.
Then 2G tells us it's for Category 2 gas environments, which maps directly to Zone 1. And then you hit XD, that is your protection method, which means flameproof.
Meaning the enclosure is built thick enough so that if gas seeps in and a spark does happen, the heavy metal box physically contains the internal blast instead of letting it blow out into the room.
Right. It assumes an internal explosion will happen.
That's terrifying, but okay.
Yeah, it is. Then, IIC designates the most volatile gas group, like hydrogen. T4 is your temperature class, and the GAB at the end is the equipment protection level.
Which just reinforces that it's suitable for a Zone 1 area, right?
Exactly. It provides a high level of protection.
Now, here's where it gets really interesting to me. Looking at those temperature classes, it's entirely counterintuitive.
How so?
Well, T1 allows a maximum surface temperature of 450 degrees Celsius, but T6 only allows 85 degrees. At first glance, you'd think the higher number, T6, means the equipment can withstand a hotter blast.
Ah, yeah. That is a very dangerous trap to fall into.
Right.
Because the T-class isn't about what the box can withstand.
Mm.
It's about making sure the outside of the box never gets hot enough to act as an ignition source itself.
So you have to pick a T-class that stays strictly below the auto-ignition temperature of whatever chemical is floating in your room.
Exactly. You nailed it.
So, like, if the ambient gas ignites at 100 degrees, you need gear that physically cannot get hotter than 85 degrees, which is the T6 rating. A T1 rating, letting the box get up to 450 degrees, would literally become the detonator.
Which is exactly why the compliance process has to be airtight on the job. You have to confirm your area classification first.
No skipping steps.
Never. You match your equipment protection level, like that grip mark we talked about, to the specific zone. And above all, you verify the certificates.
Right, using the official IESEC Certificate of Conformity database, right?
Yes, that database is fully searchable, and it ensures the hardware isn't counterfeit.
It's just fascinating how much brute force engineering goes into methods like XD just to contain an explosion, or XP using heavy pressurization to keep gas out entirely.
It's massive infrastructure, for sure.
But, you know, as industrial tech gets smaller and more efficient, it leaves you with a pretty wild thought to mull over. Will these massive physical enclosures eventually just become a thing of the past?
It's a very real possibility.
Imagine a future fully replaced by XEKAI intrinsic safety, where micro devices simply don't draw enough energy to create a spark in the first place. You're solving the hazard by removing the energy required to start it, rather than building a steam box to contain the blast.
It's definitely the direction the technology is heading.
Definitely something to think about next time you see heavy machinery operating in a hazardous zone.